looking beyond the election of a new Conservative Party leader.
Some pro-lifers think that we now have a pro-life leader. He can simply introduce legislation and it will become law. But that's not how the political and legislative process works.
We're saying, look, there's candidates speaking about preborn human rights. Let's see what we can do to ensure that those voices that they're having can continue in the arena of Parliament.
On the second half of the program today, two interviews that analyze Andrew Scheer's win in the CPC leadership race last month. In the news, Bill 89 is now law in Ontario. Senate discussion continues on Bill C-16, and the province of Ontario considers so-called bubble zone legislation to ban protests at all abortion clinics.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Ontario legislature has now passed Bill 89. This is the law that effectively gives the province the right to seize children from families that oppose LGBTQ rights and transgender ideologies. It also allows government agencies to effectively ban couples who disagree with the government on those issues from fostering or adopting. The final vote on the bill was held last Thursday morning. It received royal assent Thursday afternoon. ARPA and other pro-family groups have been putting a lot of pressure on MPPs to vote against this bill, and while it ultimately passed, it appears the lobbying did have an impact. When Bill 89 was introduced at second reading back in March, it passed unanimously. This time that didn't happen. The PC caucus, at least those who showed up for the vote, opposed the bill as a bloc. The final vote was 63-23 in favor. Every single Liberal MPP voted in favor of the legislation. PC leader Patrick Brown was absent from Queen's Park for that vote. In Ottawa, the Senate is continuing debate on Bill C-16. This is the law that would entrench protections for transgendered people into the Criminal Code and the Canada Human Rights Act, adding the terms gender identity and gender expression to the list of grounds upon which discrimination would be banned. Alberta Senator Betty Unger tried to make an amendment to the bill in earlier debate, but she was shot down.
The substance of it was that you cannot separate gender identity from gender expression. For example, someone who is expressing a trans persona, they would only do that if they truly felt they should. I compared it, to make it easier to understand, to a religious belief. A religious belief is a deeply held belief or conviction, and you express it by doing, you know, I'm Catholic, so I express it by going to church regularly, and so this should be the same. You can't have people claiming to be trans who really are not. So there was protection for trans people because it would have ensured that only genuine trans people should be allowed into gender-specific spaces.
The bill also mandates the use of various pronouns on the gender spectrum and imposes penalties on people who refuse to do that. Unger says that's raised concerns that the law would be an infringement on free speech rights.
In seeking to protect rights, this bill will endorse and impose a belief system that many Canadians just simply do not share.
A final Senate vote on the bill is now expected by the end of this week. And the Ontario government has signaled that it plans to introduce a new law later this year to specifically ban protests outside all abortion clinics in the province. So-called bubble zone legislation is already in effect for the Morgenthaler Abortion Clinic in Toronto, but there have been complaints about the actions of some protesters outside a clinic in Ottawa, so the government is moving to make that ban province-wide. ARPA's Director of Law and Policy, Andre Schutten, says there are big problems with this legislation.
To quote Christy Blatchford from the National Post, who is herself pro-choice, she says the state is using an elephant gun to kill a flea, and I think that's accurate. I mean, just because there happens to be one or two people in front of one clinic who perhaps say things that might not be as welcome as others, for them to impose a total bubble zone in the entire province for every single clinic is quite ludicrous. It's a total infringement on freedom of expression and is total overkill.
BC has a law like this too, which has been upheld by the Court of Appeal in that province. But Shuten says the issue of freedom of expression has never been taken all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada.
Bubble zone legislation has been held to be constitutional, a reasonable limit on freedom of expression. I happen to totally disagree with the BC Court of Appeal on their interpretation of that. But it's not been challenged all the way to the Supreme Court yet. So certainly a freedom of expression claim could be made in Ontario, and that goes all the way to the Supreme Court. So there's that. But there's actually another constitutional argument that can be made, and that is that the province actually has no jurisdiction to make such a law. That the infringement of expression in this way is something only the federal government could pass. So we hope to actually explore that a bit more through a Legal Journal article. One of our lawyers, John Sikkema, is exploring that this summer through some extensive legal research and writing. So we hope to see something hopefully published sometime this fall arguing against such a bubble zone.
The law will likely be introduced in the fall sitting of the Ontario Legislature. Back with more after this.
2017 marks the 150th birthday of Canada and the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. To commemorate these special occasions, ARPA Canada is hoping to present a Bible to every one of our approximately 1,200 federal and provincial leaders. Included with the Bible will be a card encouraging them to look to God's Word for life and wisdom. Are you willing to help with the Bible Project? You can donate online or by mail. To learn more, email us at info@arpacanada.ca. Thank you for your ongoing support.
And we're back on the program. You've no doubt heard by now the federal Conservatives have picked Andrew Scheer as their new leader. The 38-year-old won the post at a convention in Toronto late last month in a preferential ballot that went to 13 counts. In the end, he beat out Quebec Libertarian candidate Maxime Bernier. Scheer got just under 51% of the points in the party's riding-by-riding distribution system. Bernier ended up with just over 49%. Since the win, Scheer has been demonized by the Liberals and the NDP for being a so-called scary social conservative. There have been predictions he'll move to re-regulate abortion and undo much of what the Trudeau government is doing on things such as transgender rights. But Scheer had been clear throughout the campaign, saying any government he might lead would not introduce legislation on what he called divisive social issues. At the same time, though, he was also clear that he would allow his backbenchers to introduce private members' bills on these issues, and that votes on those things would be purely along conscience lines, with not even his cabinet ministers being bound by caucus solidarity. One thing is clear, though. Social conservatives did play a major role in the Scheer win. One of the groups that spent a lot of energy getting the social conservative vote out was the Right Now organization. Scott Hayward is one of the people behind that group. I talked to him from his home in Winnipeg a few days after the convention, just after he'd done a breakdown of the way the numbers actually worked out, about the impact social conservatives had on the outcome of the race. Scott, I read your analysis. I read the numbers that you put up. Social conservatives definitely had an impact in terms of the final result in that leadership race.
Yeah, there's no question about it. If we go through the numbers, we can see when Pierre was dropped off the ballot and when Brad was dropped off the ballot, a significant portion of Pierre's voters did go to Andrew, although not a majority because a lot of them went to Brad. But certainly when Brad was dropped off the ballot, well over 50% went to Scheer, which helped him eat up that gap between him and Bernier on that second final ballot. It went from a gap of about 6% to less than 2% on that second final ballot.
How much credit, and I want to be careful on how I ask this, but how much credit does Right Now take, or is this more a broad social conservative sort of zeitgeist within the party?
I think that our organization and certainly our volunteers and our supporters and our donors are a big reason as to why social conservatives did rank Scheer on their ballot. For the political pro-life organizations, we did recommend Andrew Scheer to be on the ballot. We recommended him as number two, while other organizations told their people not to rank him at all. It is comforting to know that the vast majority of people who put Brad Trost as number one on their ballot did rank Scheer somewhere on their ballot, probably within their top three, if not top five, and ahead of Maxime Bernier. So we were the primary organization that was out there, that was on social media, going across the country physically, talking to people on the ground, calling them, emailing them, texting them, to give them all the information that we had gathered to let them know our recommended ranked ballot and to certainly say that Andrew Scheer is 100% pro-life candidate and deserves to be at the top of your ballot.
There's a piece on iPolitics written by a guy named Martin Patrickwin. We'll link to it on the text version of the program. The headline is "So Conned: Why Social Conservatives Lost When Scheer Won." It's a rather cynical piece that says Andrew Scheer is not going to do anything for social conservatives. That's really the bottom line. What's your take on that?
Well, I think we need to have reasonable and measured expectations. I think sometimes some pro-lifers think that, oh, you know, we have a pro-life leader. He can simply introduce legislation and it will become law. But that's not how the political and legislative process works. You need to have a majority in both the House of Commons and the Senate in order to pass any legislation, whether it be pro-life or otherwise. A good example is that in the United States, it took the pro-life movement the better part of 30 years to get a pro-life majority in the House of Representatives, a pro-life majority in the Senate, and then to have a pro-life administration in the White House. You need all three at the same time in order to pass pro-life legislation, and that's what they're doing down there. It's no different here. We need a majority in both houses of parliament, and we need to have a pro-life prime minister. So this is the first step of only one piece of the puzzle for the long-term game, but it is a huge step forward. It is an important step, and we're really glad that we took it. We're really glad that pro-lifers right across the country got engaged into it. And so now the next step is to get out there, hit the ground this summer in targeted ridings to identify other pro-lifers in key polls to make sure that we win those nominations for the 2019 election so that we can elect as many pro-life members of parliament as possible.
Sure, we're out of time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Al.
We Need a Law, ARPA's pro-life arm, was also involved in the leadership campaign, but with a somewhat different focus. The organization had a booth set up on the convention floor, and I went there to talk to Director Mike Schutten about 20 minutes after the leadership voting had concluded.
We're standing here at the conclusion of the Conservative leadership campaign in Toronto. Mike, quite a night.
Yeah, it was exciting to be here. I mean, we were here the whole weekend. It was exciting just because we were here advocating for pre-born human rights. As the Lighthouse News listeners will know, we don't oppose or support any individual candidate. We advocate for pre-born human rights. And there were many candidates talking about it. But being here at the convention with all the members coming past our exhibit, it was so telling as to how much support there is out there for an international standards abortion law. Whether people identified as pro-choice or pro-life, they understood that if you're pro-life, saving some is better than saving none. And if you're pro-choice, that fetal interests need to be protected at some point. So we're super encouraged with the outcome, with Andrew Scheer being the new leader. Obviously, his track record is that he is pro-life. He's obviously, you know, had to dance a little bit during the leadership race, but we're very hopeful that he's going to stay true to his word and allow private members' bills to come forward that would address the legal void that exists in Canada.
You know, looking at the result, there were two other social conservative candidates. About a month ago, we had all three of them on for a debate here, and that was Brad Trost and Pierre Lemieux. They both did very well. Trost ended up, I think, fourth or fifth. He lasted till beyond the 10th ballot. That's got to say something as well about the makeup of the party and the fact that this messaging is starting to have an impact.
Yeah, I think it says a number of things. One is that the work that we've been doing and that our supporters have been supporting and engaging in for 5 years now is paying off. That Canada's the only country in the world with nothing. We heard that refrain many times during this leadership race. But also, it goes to show you that there are a lot more pro-lifers in Canada than some Canadians and especially some in the media might like to think. It also, I think, says to Canadians that socially conservative people, they're a motivated bunch of people. And when you ask them to commit to something, like supporting a candidate, like buying a membership, like getting out to actually vote for that candidate, they follow through on it. So SOCONs are an effective group of people in Canada, and it's encouraging for us to know that.
Going forward, you know, you talk about the fact we didn't endorse anybody as ARPA or We Need a Law. But there were some relationships built, I'm sure, with the Lemieux campaign, with the Trost campaign, and also with the winner, Mr. Scheer. Can we capitalize on those relationships on the ground when it comes to moving things forward?
Yeah, I definitely think so. We've been cultivating these relationships for many years now. And what we're seeing is that because we're engaging on this issue in a respectful manner and being actually nonpartisan, like treating them all the same. We're not saying everybody has to vote for Scheer or has to vote for Brad Trost. We're saying, look, there's candidates speaking about pre-born human rights. Let's see what we can do to ensure that those voices that they're having can continue in the arena of Parliament, the House of Commons.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care, Al.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, Lighthouse News at arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.